This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
The Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre presents Well, Well, Well on Joy, the show that's all about sex, health and well-being.
Joy, Joy, Joy.
Hello and welcome to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, presented to you every week by the Victorian AIDS Council as we talk about health and well-being in our gender, sex and sexually diverse community. I'm Adam and I'm joined this week by my co-host Daniel, who's panelling.
Got a little bit excited there, so much so I didn't even turn the switch on, but that's okay.
Absolutely, absolutely. So are you excited for tonight's show?
You know I am. We've got some colleagues in the room, so it's a bit family. More importantly, I'm going on holidays in 2 days, so very excited.
Well, stuff you.
Yeah.
So
we'll talk about that more later. Yeah?
No, we won't. We won't be talking about that ever again. So actually, what is on the show tonight?
So we'll be speaking to Wendy and Garth from Counselling and Alcohol and Drug Services at VAC. And we're going to talk about the range of services we offer at VAC and to members of our community.
So if people want to get involved, because obviously drug use is a very hot topic, kind of regardless of where you go, and especially within our community.
Very true.
Some people very either moralistic in their approach or their views, should I say, and some people quite liberal. But if people want to get involved in the conversation, what plethora of ways, and that's for Tessie Marie, that little comment. How can they get involved?
Well, I found it there. So there's actually a way that's not listed here, which is really good. You can actually call Joy and speak to Robert, and he'll actually take the message and send it through, which I think is a personal touch, a little bit old school. But there's several ways.
Speak to a real live person. It's certainly not a bank.
Yeah, no, that's right. And the best way, though, is you can email us directly, and that's onair@joy.org.au, or you can SMS 0427JOY949, and both of those get right here in the studio. Yeah.
I know, and we actually really like to hear from the listener. So if you've got a comment or even just sort of a suggestion about the topic of alcohol and drug issues, or if you know someone who's going through something and you just want to share a little bit of something that's personal to you, you can remain completely anonymous. You can say what you want to say, and you don't actually have to let us know who you are. A lot of people do write in and say, from anonymous in St Kilda, just so you know that it's you in St Kilda. But yeah, we actually like to hear from you guys out there, just to let you know that one, you're listening, and two, you care about what we've got to say.
So I'll keep an eye on those messages coming through then.
Absolutely.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. I'm Daniel, and I'm panelling tonight, if you couldn't already tell, and kind of fitting with this song called I Do What I Like by The Corrs. So welcome back in. Tonight we've got Wendy and Garth from our Counselling and Alcohol and Other Drug Service at VAC. So guys, welcome to Well, Well, Well.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So I guess jump straight into it. So I guess, Wendy and Garth, you both work in our Counselling and Alcohol and Drug Services VAC. So what are your actual roles, or what are your actual roles within these services specifically?
Okay, Adam, I'm a counsellor in the Alcohol and Drug Services, so I'm an alcohol and drug counsellor.
Pretty spot bang on.
I also facilitate some groups that we run at VAC.
Yeah.
I work out of two different offices. So we have the VAC office on the south side, and I also work out of a partner organisation on the north side.
So he's outposted, so to speak. So my role most recently was to be the manager of Counselling, Alcohol and Drug Services at VAC, and I've recently stepped into a different role which is not related to the AOD service, but I feel fairly comfortable to talk about it as we get further into the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I guess, have you had other roles in these sectors before? Is it like, because, you know, obviously counselling is such a diverse sector to sort of work within, and there's a plethora, I'm going to try and use that word as much as possible all night, a plethora of different sort of avenues that you can have, or professions that you can have within the counselling service. So I guess, what other roles have you had in the sector, and if so, kind of what were they? Were they a bit different, or were they similar to the ones you've had at VAC?
I guess I've worked in counselling. I've been with VAC for 7 months. Prior to that, I was in Canberra, and I worked for an AIDS organisation there. I was a counsellor and also a peer support worker. And in my role in Canberra, I dealt mainly with recent diagnosis of HIV positive persons. So different, but kind of in the same sector within the LGBTI community.
And so would you find that the peer support component is different to what you do on a day-to-day basis? Because you did sort of mention that you go to, you sort of run groups as well or facilitate groups.
Yep.
That we'll probably get into a bit later, but is it sort of different to what you're doing now?
Yes. Peer facilitation is quite different to counselling.
Yep.
So as a peer, I'm sort of dealing with, I guess, people who I identify perhaps having similar issues to myself, like as a HIV positive man, that was my role to deal with working with HIV positive people. As a counsellor, I'm dealing with a completely different variety of issues that people come in with. So, you know, all aspects of our community. In my role at VAC, I'm AOD, so it's generally around that. So.
And what about you, Wendy?
Well, in terms of my professional background, I'm social work trained and I come from a family therapy background as well. And I've worked in the AOD sector on and off since the late 90s. And I've also worked in, you know, a range of areas, child, youth and family, for example. Couples therapy, a range of different contexts, I guess.
So the whole gambit, as
yeah,
I sort of alluded
I've
to
worked,
before.
I haven't actually worked in aged care per se, but I've certainly worked with multi-generational family issues. I guess one of the things that is fairly transfers across all those generations in terms of impact can be alcohol and drug issues.
Yep.
No matter who in the family is experiencing those particular issues, the rippling effect for family members can be quite significant as well.
And so how long, Garth, have you actually been in the sector all up? Because Wendy, you sort of mentioned that you'd been in sort of, I guess, the sector since the 90s, which I assume you would have seen just about every possible change in terms of service delivery and, I guess, different packages. But what about you, Garth?
I guess I've been working in the LGBTI community in this sector, probably about 2.5 years.
Relatively new.
Relatively new, yeah.
But feet sort of wet enough to know that you actually want to stay.
Absolutely, I love it. You know, being a gay man, this is my community, so I know what's going on. But I love my job. It's fantastic. I feel very blessed, so... Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Because we've got a whole team at VAC. How big's our team, our AOD team?
The AOD team is about 4 staff, but because it sits within the Counselling, Alcohol and Drug Services as an entire service area, we have roughly 14 staff and we have about 10 volunteer counsellors that support the work, particularly of the counselling services area. So we're a very diverse program and we offer alcohol and drug services, we offer individual counselling, we offer couples counselling. We also in the counselling services area have therapeutic groups, and I know later on we'll talk about the AOD therapeutic groups, which Garth is heavily involved with at the moment. So yes, the AOD team is a small, discrete team within a larger team.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So we're going to keep talking, but now you're on Joy 94.9 and this is Well, Well, Well.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9 and we're speaking with Wendy and Garth from the Counselling and Alcohol and Drug Services that we have at the Victorian AIDS Council. So we talked about, I guess, the plethora of ways that you've been involved in the sector, but what made you get interested in being involved specifically in the AOD sector, Garth?
I guess I'd always been interested in counselling from a very, well, in high school I did some psychology units, which I really enjoyed. And then I guess as I got older, I had issues...
Matured.
Thank you. Yeah. I had issues of substance abuse with myself, so I kind of engaged in counselling services that were very helpful and really beneficial to me. And I guess it kind of gave me some insight into what I wanted to do and a bit of direction in my life. And so I thought... That's what I want to do. I want to go back to study and I want to give back to the community.
And do you think that that personal experience sort of provides you with a deeper level of insight rather than being trained and, I guess, having experience with clients? You think that personal sort of insight where you sort of know where you've come from and your journey, you can actually not transfer onto the client, but you can actually understand where the client's coming from a little bit more? Or
I think it can help you understand, perhaps with empathy. I mean, everybody's journey is very individual, and you know, and addiction is such a personal journey for everyone. But I do think it allows me some understanding for my personal practice in the counselling room. And I think people often respond well if they feel that you've been through something similar to them. They can relate quite well and feel perhaps more open and willing to share with you.
Yeah.
So.
And what perspective does AOD, the AOD service at VAC, come from? What's the angle? What's
the angle? We're trying to sell.
Yes, yeah.
We're trying to
sell.
Well, no, there's different approaches, obviously, with, I guess, with psychology, for example. I've got a psych degree. Everybody says they've got a psych degree, but, like, it's whether you actually utilise it and actually put it to good use, which is the big difference. Mm. So there's obviously lots of different approaches. So what sort of approach does the AOD team have, or the counselling team have at VAC?
Well, primarily we work from a harm minimisation framework, and that is, sector. It's a common sector approach for people who are wanting to deal with their AOD issues. It's also part of the national drug strategy as part of the framework. And the reason we work from that perspective is because for people experiencing alcohol and drug issues, whether you're experiencing problematic use or whether you're experiencing longer-term use, which might be determined as, you know, addiction, a harm minimisation approach is more realistic for most people. And also a lot of people who are engaged in alcohol and drug use know that it takes more than one go to really, become fully abstinent if that's what you want to do. So I think the abstinence model works for some, but a great many people respond more positively to a kind of a harm minimisation approach where they get to make some very clear choices for themselves and don't feel... I think sometimes the abstinence model, again, I stress it works for some people, and many people take that approach, so I'm not trying to dismiss that. But I think for a lot of people, the abstinence approach sometimes feels like it has a fairly sort of moralistic overtone to it, that's not what we're about at VAC.
And so the phrase harm minimisation gets thrown around left, right and centre sometimes these days without sort of, I guess, knowing the intricacies of it. If you were sort of to summarise it as a concept, how would you do that?
That's a really good question, Adam.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the way I talk to people about harm minimisation is very much to get them to have a conversation with me about exactly what their drug use or alcohol use looks like for them on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, whatever they determine is problematic for them. We might have a holistic look at how that's impacting on other areas of their life, and we might then consider making small changes along the way to minimise some of the harms that are they're experiencing in their lived experience. They might not want to start with reducing their drug use. They might want to start with looking at their important relationships in their life and seeing whether there's some improvements they could make there. Or they may want to look at what's happening in their work life, for example, and make some improvements there. But generally, when you look at the foundational sort of key issues around how AOD use is connected to other areas of difficulty, eventually you need to come back into that space and have a look at, you know, what's going on with the drug use or the alcohol use.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that answers the question, but
no,
that's the way I work with the concept with the clients with the consumers. Yeah.
I think from that perspective, it's sort of talking about improvements and also minimising harms, but it's sort of like that combination balance. It's not like, okay, so what risky behaviours are you engaging in and how do we stop those behaviours or how do we reduce them? It's like, well, what areas can we actually improve on as well?
Mm.
And sort of looking at it, as you said, in like a holistic approach and an overarching sort of view, and then getting the client to sort of decide what areas they would like to focus on and then identifying themselves what they would like to change and how, I guess.
And I think it's also, certainly in talking to families for many years in doing this work, there's always a sort of an overtone that families, you know, if only they would stop using, everything else would be fine.
Mm.
And I think that while that's how it might feel for them, when you start to unpack that with either the individual person who is using or you talk with the family members around it, you generally start to identify that there's a whole lot of other issues around risk, as you referred to before, that need to come into the conversation. And I think that if you broaden out the scope of the conversation and don't fall into sort of, I think the jargon term is pathologizing people because they're using substances of one type or another. I think you generally, as Garth referred to before, you're able to bring a lot more empathy into the conversation. And that's what people need, that human context.
Yep.
They need to feel that they're being seen as a person and not as a problem.
Absolutely.
Well, 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 on Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and it feels like we're just scratching the surface. We're talking about the alcohol and other drug services at VAC. If you had to, how would you summarise the services that we've got? What are some of them? Maybe we can go through them together.
Okay, we offer a variety of services, from one-on-one counselling. We do therapeutic groups, and we also offer peer support groups. Things like our Rewired program, Drink Limits, Rewired 2.0, which is a peer support group based on the Smart Recovery program.
So what would be the biggest difference between peer support and peer education? I mean, are they interchangeable terms, or is it actually a completely fundamental different concept?
I guess support is more about supporting someone through a process or a time, where education is where I guess you're providing education to a group, like delivered by a peer to a peer group. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what do you find, well, I guess if somebody gets referred to the AOD services, mm-hmm. how do you determine whether it's one-on-one, therapeutic or peer support groups that are, guys, are probably going to make the biggest impact mm-hmm. or can probably address the issues that the client's facing, whether it's sort of immediate or whether it's sort of longer term or, yeah, where do you place them basically or how do you place them?
Question.
That's sort of a
clients, when they approach the service, they go through a process of assessment and screening, and from that is determined like whether, you know, it's one-on-one or perhaps if they want to go into a group. Often people approach us and they've heard about our groups and they're interested in becoming a member or a participant within that group. Or, you know, going through the one-on-one process, we can refer our clients into certain programs that we think will benefit them.
To interrupt you, but also the other aspect of it is we take as close as possible a person-centred approach. Mm. So we really try and work with clients around what are your own goals for you right now, and as Garth has indicated, there is a clear assessment and screening process. So sometimes we need to support clients to shift their own kind of ideas about where they're at in their relationship to their own recovery, and we might need to support them in a one-on-one context, and then, as Garth referred to before, you know, support them into going into other group-based programs if that's appropriate.
And so you mentioned that we've got a couple of groups already, so like Rewired 2.0 I know is one of them, and we've got a Drink Limits group as well. So kind of what are those groups focusing on, and who are they aimed at, I guess, would just to provide a little bit more information rather than this is what it's called.
Yeah,
but
for
you
sure.
Don't know what it is.
Yeah. So Rewired, there's two parts to Rewired. And Rewired is a program for men who have sex with men and have issues with meth use. So as I said, there's two parts to it. There's Rewired and Rewired 2.0. The Rewired program is a therapeutic group. So it's a group that runs for 6 weeks. And it's a therapeutic group, so it's quite structured. We deal with issues like we look at triggers, relapse prevention, things like intimacy and sex and meth. You know, life after meth, looking at you know the changing social situation that evolves from not using meth, and then there's Rewired 2.0, which is a peer support support group. So we have a few fantastic facilitators who are peers within that group. They've all been trained, and they meet fortnightly. And it's a support group, so you know, based on the Smart Recovery program, so individual participants devise their own goals and work towards it, towards achieving those goals. Then we have Drink Limits, which is for same-sex attracted women with issues around alcohol. Again, it's a therapeutic group led by women, 4 women, fantastic group. We're looking at running that in September. So very excited about that one.
To come back to Rewired, you were talking about it. So would someone go through the therapeutic group and then move on to Rewired 2.0, the peer group, or could some people just go straight into the peer group, or how would that normally work?
Yeah, it's a good question. You don't need to do the therapeutic group to go into 2.0,
okay.
But often people who have done the therapeutic group for that ongoing support transition into the 2.0. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I thought that 2.0 was just kind of like, hey, we've done it before, but now we're doing it again, but with much bigger emphasis. So to actually sort of see that there's a completely different sort of process or a path or a referral pathway, I guess, for individuals, sort of it increases the ability of options that people have in terms of accessing our services. And I guess it sort of shows the wealth of services. And to have, I guess, peer-trained facilitators running Rewired 2.0 and have a completely different focus is a really interesting concept.
I think the really important element of it, apart from all of what you've just said, is that for all of those groups, drink limits included, even though there is yet to be a peer-led step-down group from drink limits, but with the Rewired options, there's a step into the group, there's a step down through Rewired 2.0, and you can go back the other way if you need to. I mean, if people... you know, Rewired 2.0 isn't enough, you can go back through the other way as well.
Yeah.
So it's really good.
Oh, fantastic.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well on Joy 94.9. And we're going through, I suppose, the services we were just talking about at VAC, and in particular the Alcohol and Other Drug Program. For listeners out there, how would they know if they had a problem? What would make them access the services at VAC?
Well, it's very individual, of course. So how would they know if they had a problem? They might feel like they've been experiencing poor health in a more kind of continuous way, for example, not really connecting the dots around their use and other health issues that are happening. They might find that they're experiencing conflict in relationships where they weren't before. They might find that they're not able to turn up to work as regularly as they've been used to in the past. They might find that they're socialising with a particular group of people more often because that's, you know, the context of their drug use, for example. So what might be, for some people, fortnightly or monthly or whatever, it may become, you know, three times a week or something like that. Those sorts of indicators. They might find that they're spending more money than they would normally spend in that context. There's a range of... What would you say, Garth?
Yeah, all that. Yeah, that, and I guess the way it impacts upon your relationships and your ability to function in day-to-day life. And, you know, I get, you know, is you want once a month turning into, you know, once a fortnight or once a week to all weekend, and how's that impacting upon your ability to cope going forward? Yeah, I think you covered it all there.
Well, just kind of on that note, what causes people to have an issue in comparison to an addiction, or is there a difference at all? Because what some person might classify as an addiction, as you said, sort of, I guess, more frequent use or having a weekend sort of a binging bender, but then not using again for 6 months, but other people who use every day but function quite properly and not sort of seeing some adverse side effects because they're only using very minimal. What's the difference between an issue and an addiction, and what causes the difference? And if you could answer that, I bet you'd be an absolute millionaire, but I'm going to throw it towards you anyway.
I was going to say, it's a very complex question, and it's multi-layered, and it certainly comes back to the individual person, really, and how their use is impacting on their life in a very holistic way. And, you know, you're quite right, there are people out there that are functioning quite well in their worlds and quite content and happy and maybe using, you know, on a daily basis. For other people using on a daily basis, it's an absolute train wreck. And, you know, they're doing it really hard. They could end up actually, you know, living on the streets as a result. So that's, you know, there's two ends of the continuum there, I suppose.
So does the person have to be cognizant that they have an addiction to have an addiction?
That's a good question. Yeah. I would guess they would have to have some level of awareness, some sort of self-assessment would have to come into play for them to determine that what used to be okay for them is now no longer okay for them. Would you say that, Garth?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Because I guess from an outsider's point of view, it comes across as, if I can't go without, therefore I am an addict in that sort of respect. But that's maybe because it's, you know, that's the way it's portrayed in films, and that's the way it's sort of conveyed in sort of a moralistic fire, but not necessarily a reality of the lived experience.
But I do think that when people have reached the end of the continuum where they're experiencing addiction, you know, there are some actual clinical determinants around addiction. And, you know, if you're finding yourself waking up in the morning and your first thought is, the only way I'm going to get through this day is I need to have, you know, that first drink for the day or that first hit for the day or whatever your preferred substance is, and that you're doing that regularly because that's the only way you can cope to get through your day, then somewhere in that sort of self-assessment, you're going to understand that your body is telling you, hey, I'm pretty sick, I'm not feeling really great. And then there's the mental health component that comes with that as well. So people might be experiencing a whole range of things from, again, down the more problematic end of drug-induced psychosis, coming back more towards middle ground or perhaps not so serious as psychosis. There could be really serious mood swings happening for people, sleeplessness, irritability. All those sorts of issues can be presenting. So, yeah, it's not one size fits all, of course.
You were talking about it being kind of in relationships, it could be problematic and it could be played out there. And I'm just thinking back to even when I was younger and friends as well experiencing the same. How would you kind of have that conversation with a friend, or if you were kind of bringing up the idea of getting help, what are some tips? Because I know that's something I struggled with when I was younger, about having those conversations with friends. But
it's a very difficult conversation to have with anyone, I think. I guess, you know, you sit someone down and sort of like be gentle. I mean, you talk about, bring up issues about, perhaps look at their behaviour, get them to question what's going on with them.
It's like a real honest conversation, isn't
it? I think honesty is great in this kind of conversation. I think it's also great if you're really concerned about your friend, perhaps you go in with some information. Perhaps a referral number to VAC.
I think there's a really wonderful initiative at the moment, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it comes through the Beyond Blue messaging around, particularly for young men at the moment, around depression and suicidality, and it's, you know, are you okay? I think that's a great question, and I think it can apply across many different areas of young people's lives. And if you are noticing that somebody that you care about is, you know, potentially presenting like they have a drug problem or an alcohol problem, one of the things you can do is say, hey, are you okay, mate? You never know where it's going to go.
Sounds so simple.
And I think often with alcohol and with addiction issues, people become very isolated. So I think that, you know, asking someone, are you okay, just as simple as that, makes them feel connected, supported, and you know, valued, and I think it can make a huge difference.
Well, I was just going to sort of touch on that. How important are the sort of support systems and structures, personal networks and social connectedness? In how important are those factors in sort of, I guess, either someone's recovery or their journey, I should probably say, rather than recovery, in sort of facilitating and being able to sort of go, all right, so now I've gone through the therapeutic group, but then I've got to go home and I've got to deal with this, and it sort of, it doesn't go away just because I've done the group or I've seen people. So those sort of social support networks, are they kind of trivial or are they kind of core at cementing? I'm asking really difficult questions.
Yeah, no,
sorry.
It's a really great question. I think they're core to a person's recovery. Like we've sort of mentioned before, isolation is a huge factor in addiction, I personally think. And, you know, if we're isolated, we've got no one to talk to, and we're feeling down, we're feeling low, how do we feel better? We use, because that's, we learn to that. And unfortunately, I guess a pattern with addiction is that people tend to, through isolating themselves, but, you know, through use, tend to withdraw from their social networks, from their family, and really, you know, through shame and guilt, the stigma attached with addiction is really crippling. So feeling supported and heard and seen is vitally important. So they're not trivial at all. I think they're very core.
So this is Well, Well, Well. You can get in contact with us, of course. You can SMS 0427 JOY 949. You can also call the lovely Robert on 1300 JOY 949 or send us an email in the studio on air at joy.org.au.
For over 20 years, Channel 31 has been Melbourne and Geelong's destination for local homegrown community television. And now, we're proud to announce the release of our new app, which gives you free and unlimited access to all of your favourite Channel 31 shows. Binge watch entire seasons of the best community TV programs in Australia, anytime, anywhere, with new content uploaded daily. Head over to c31.org.au and follow the links, or go directly to your favourite app store and download the C31 app today.
Joy 94.9 is proud to support this community message.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. So we've kind of alluded to it before in terms of there's several forms of help available and sort of what they are, like counselling or peer workshops. And the one thing we haven't really touched on is detox rehab and pharmacotherapy and stuff like that. But I guess from your experience or from your perspectives, what is the most successful option, or does it differ by person or by their degree of issue or the type of issue, or all of the above?
Multiple choice, I love it.
Multiple choice, yes.
I think you've kind of answered your own question in some regard. Look, I think the it doesn't matter if, necessarily. People relate to different terms differently. So some people really relate strongly to the word recovery. Others like the word journey. Other people go more clinically and, you know, like the word treatment. All those modalities that you've spoken about through peer support or residential treatment through detox or rehab, pharmacotherapy, they're all as legitimate as each other, and it really is very dependent on A, the substance the person's struggling with, their own goals for themselves at the time when they connect and seek help for their drug use or their alcohol use. So I'm not sure. I think the answer is what works. And the one thing that I'm very committed to as someone who's worked in the AOD field on and off since the late 1990s is I believe very firmly that treatment works no matter what it's constructed from, you know, as long as it's not doing you any harm. And some wise person said to me after I'd done years and years and years of study and training, oh, well, you know, you can get just as good a therapy with a cup of coffee and a friend at the local cafe. And you can, sometimes.
I guess going from an extreme in terms of sort of detox and rehabilitation, sort of a structured format, to having a conversation, kind of, I can't put that in my mind, but I guess, as you said, it's very individualistic, and what works, works.
Mm. Well, let me contextualise what I mean by that. That coffee and chat with a friend might actually be your entry point into all those elements of support, treatment, you know, those sorts of things with more clinically based programs.
And what if it's sort of poly drug use addiction?
And I'm guessing that's come up a lot.
Yes.
People don't tend to just use one substance. I assume
Adam's
that
using lots of big words tonight. Yeah. So that's basically people using more than one drug, is that right?
That's what I did my thesis on.
Yeah. Poly drug use. Look, I think, there's different approaches depending on, even if people are engaged in poly substance use, there's generally a primary substance that they rely on, and they tend to bring other substances into the mix sometimes contextually, depending on what they're doing. So it's very much about really solid clinical assessments of that person's presenting issues to help them define what is the most problematic aspect of their use. And certainly we engage in secondary consultation with addiction medicine specialists when we need to. We don't think we're a one-stop shop in that regard. That's not part of our expertise. Mm. So we do look outside of our services and connect people appropriately as required.
That's what I was going to touch on. What would prevent someone from having access to our services, or would lead us to refer them on to other? What are some of the things that have come up so far?
I think not much would stop people from accessing our services. One of the things we didn't mention earlier, we have also a care recovery coordination component to alcohol and drug service, and that service is designed to work with people who perhaps are living a more chaotic sort of lifestyle around their drug use, and they might have a whole lot of other more high-risk issues in their life, i.e. like they may be homeless, for example, and they need somewhere to live. And so that care recovery coordination component is also designed to link people in to specific support services that might be getting them a really well, well-defined relationship with a GP, for example.
And so if someone wanted to access VAC services and or probably get more information about everything that's offered, Garth, like what's the best place to go or how do they go about it?
I guess you can go to our website, the VAC website. If you're looking to sort of be assessed and to sort of be referred into the service, we have a 1-800 number, which is 1-800-906-669, which is on the VAC website. Or you can call VAC in for a more general sort of inquiry. But I'd say that's your best place to go first off.
And the number for VAC is 9865-6700, and just ask to speak to the duty worker or one of the AOD workers.
Fantastic. Well, guys, thanks so much for coming in. I mean, I guess we probably could have harped on about alcohol and drug use all night. Get a double entendre. Okay, didn't land. But like,
sorry, Adam.
That's fine. No, be fair. Yeah, well, look, thanks so much for coming on. And I guess I think we're probably going to have you guys come back on at another time, maybe even to talk about specifically one of the groups that is being run and sort of delving into the, I guess, the depth of issues and exactly how one of those groups plays out, because it's just absolutely fascinating and there's so much to talk about.
That would be great. Thank you.
Yeah, really enjoy coming back. And thanks so much for having us on tonight.
Thank you very much.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well on Joy 94.9. And can you believe that we've nearly come to the end of the show?
And I was just warming up. I've got that out of my system now, the panellings.
Well, if you've got any complaints about the panelling, you can SMS 040. No, I'm joking about that. But I guess there is something that we probably should mention that's coming up quite soon. It is a VAC fundraiser called Whose Eyeliner Is It Anyway?
No, I stumbled on this because I was thinking it's got a reference point. I couldn't quite get it. Whose line is it anyway? I was remembering Foxtel in the mid-90s maybe.
So, I mean, I guess it's basically, the way they describe it is grab your false eyelashes, smoke up those eyes and watch some of Melbourne's finest performers from the worlds of musical theatre, cabaret, drag, and television tackle a series of spontaneous sketches.
It's not that hard.
Exactly.
And working with only a few random ideas from the audience and a fabulous cougar Morrison, prepare yourself for quirky skits, outrageous scenes, sumptuous songs, as we bring you a night of high-energy entertainment. Yes, this was written for me, and with a dollop of glamour. Yeah. See, what copywriting? That's great.
Well, exactly. So the event is actually going to be held at the Howler in Brunswick on the 12th of September at 7 p.m. So tickets range from $28, which I think if you pre-purchase, and $49 for VIP meet and greet with the MC and whatnot. But if you want to get tickets, go to the website, which is www.h-w-l-r.com. And all the proceeds are actually going straight to VAC and the ongoing work that we do here, so which is absolutely fantastic.
Great. Adam, thanks for your support tonight.
I was an absolute help. Well, thanks very much, guys. We'll be back next week. This has been Well on Joy 94.9.
Well, bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being on Joy 94.9. On Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLB TIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.